Hello, Northumberland County. This is Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7 FM's Real Estate Talk Show. I'm Dale Bryant, and I'm an active real estate broker with Royal LePage Pro Alliance Realty Brokerage, and Reality Realty is your local real estate forum where we take on, we talk about, and we interview guests on all things real estate with a direct focus on Northumberland County and the communities within it. On today's show, we have a special guest. We have Ainsley Brush. Ainsley is a Canadian accredited insurance broker and a chartered insurance professional with the Insurance Protection Group here in Cobourg. And Ainsley will be talking about how familiar we are with our home insurance policies. We'll also be talking about the most common insurance claims and ways to possibly prevent or minimize those claims. We'll also take a look at concerns that home insurers have when you're buying a home. As always, we'll look at a snapshot of today's residential real estate market in Northumberland County and our points to ponder segment. So first things first, let's take a look at snapshot, which is a look at the residential real estate market here in Northumberland County. So the first thing we like to look at is usually, how many homes have sold over the past month? And the reason we use the past month, we want to know what latest trend we are in. And so there's been 75 homes sold over the past month here on the Northumberland County Board. The number has been dwindling over the past 8-10 weeks, and it's been getting lower. It's a reflection of the time of year. The next thing I like to do is take a look at what is the inventory. How many homes are for sale right now? And when we look at the residential market, I'm looking at single family homes and condominiums. And so right now our inventory is at 299 homes for sale. And once again, those numbers have been coming down, down, down. We haven't had anything under 300 for months and months. So let's take a look at the average listing price and sale price in our community. And for this stat, I like to look over a full year. I like to take a look, and since it's an average, take all the different seasons into account, all the different real estate markets into account. And as of this week, as of last night, the homes that successfully sold over the past 12 months were listed at approximately, on average, $313,000. And those homes sold for, on average, $303,000. So people were receiving 97% of their asking price in a market time of 63 days. Now, since we began this show over a year ago, that the one thing that's changed is the market time. Northumberland County had a market time in the 80s when we first started the show over a year ago, and that number has just been slowly coming down until today we're at a days on market we've never seen before, 63 days on market. So I used some of these statistics to figure out an absorption rate, and that basically tells us if we're in a buyer's market, seller's market, or a balanced market. And we're at a 25% absorption rate, which definitely is in a seller's market, and that's the kind of market we've been in for most of the year. There's been a few weeks we've popped into a balanced market, but then right back to a seller's market. Basically, it's a reflection of the inventory that's available. And when we reported on 299 residential homes for sale, that inventory is low. So it is a seller's market. If you're thinking of buying or selling a home, this is the kind of information that will be of interest to you. But you'll be looking not for the general information countywide. You'll be looking for information like this specific to your area you're looking at, the property type, and the price band you're looking in. So talk to your local realtor. Your local realtor understands the Northumberland market information that's most relevant to you. And these statistics and the information required to calculate the absorption rate come to us from the Northumberland Hills Association of Realtors. So what are today's mortgage rates? Well, these mortgage rates come to us from mortgage broker Carol Ann Bryant here in Northumberland County. And the best five-year fixed remains the same at 2.54%. That's been that rate for a number of weeks now. But the best five-year variable just lowered slightly, and it lowered from 2.10% to 2.05%. So that is 2.05%. It's the best five-year variable today. Reality Realty's Points to Ponder, an interesting segment we do every week, and typically the origins of this segment come to me from different articles I read, either industry journals or online articles, and this Points to Ponder is no different. This Points to Ponder came from an article online from the Canadian Real Estate Magazine on Monday, this past Monday. And the article is titled, "Quebec Broker Sells Most Expensive MLS Home Ever." So naturally, whether you're in the real estate industry or not, a title like that's going to perk your interest, and it certainly did mine. So this article reads that the most expensive home ever to be sold through the MLS system, so that's the multiple listing service, has been sold by a Quebec broker in Quebec. The record-breaking sale was for a 20-bedroom, 7-bath home with a home theater, an indoor pool, a gym, 3 kitchens, and it was a stone-sided mansion in the Estrie region. Interesting. Lots of bedrooms. Must be a huge house. So the selling price for this, $13.25 million, which seems like a lot of money. But it apparently was a bit of a bargain because the asking price was $25 million. So quite a discount. So I read this article and I thought, that seems a bit strange. Even though $13.25 million is a ton of money, I'm certain I've seen a number of homes go for more. So I took a quick look on the MLS system for Toronto on the Toronto Real Estate Board, and in no time flat, I found a home that sold in Toronto in 2007 for $15,780,000. So I thought, okay, the writer of that article missed one home, maybe. So I took another look, and in 2011, I found another home in Toronto that sold for $17,500,000. So, interesting article, should read something like, house sells for a lot of money, maybe not the most on the MLS system. But the interesting point of this is it made me think about our own community. And I thought, well, what if I do a search for the most expensive residential homes that have sold here in Northumberland County? And so I did a search for residential homes anywhere in Northumberland County that sold for $1 million or more in any year that was still in the archives of our real estate board system. And the winning home, the most expensive home on the system, was here in Coburg. It was a home that was on the waterfront. It was a 6-bedroom, 7-bath home on about 5 acres with an in-ground pool. And in 2012, so not too long ago, this home sold for $2,350,000. So as far as our board records go, $2,350,000 is our record. It's a far cry from the, and I didn't do a complete search on the Toronto board, but it's a far cry from the $16 and $17 million homes in Toronto, but it's still very substantial, and I'm sure it was a beautiful home. So you might be wondering, well, is that a fluke? How many homes, Dale, came up over $1 million? And there were 20 homes that came up that sold over $1 million here in our community. 8 of them were in Cobourg, 7 of them in Port Hope, and the remaining areas had 5. So no one section of the community has a lock on the title of most expensive homes in Northumberland County. They're a bit spread out. And when I think about our snapshot segment, where we take a look at what percentage of asking price do homes typically receive and how long on the market, especially after that article where the where is it now? The asking price was $25 million and it sold for $13.25 million. I took a look at the asking price and the selling price, and of these 20 homes, which now, to be fair, this is in a time span, the first home over $1 million on the records was sold in 2006. So between 2006 to now, those 20 homes were receiving approximately 90% of their asking price, not the 97% that the average home is receiving over the past year, but 90%. And in a market time of 182 days. So on average, they've been taking almost 3 times as long to sell a home of in that price range. So that, folks, is our points to ponder. Well, today I would like to welcome Ainsley Brush. Ainsley is a Canadian accredited insurance broker and chartered insurance professional with the Insurance Protection Group. And we will be talking about how familiar you are with your home insurance policy. What do you know or not know about it that you ought to? And what type of items homeowners might be unfamiliar with when it comes to those policies. So Ainsley, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Dale.
Ainsley, what did you think about those luxury homes, those high-priced homes?
I think they're amazing. I watch the shows, the million-dollar listing shows on TV all the time, and I'm in awe of those homes.
So what's more amazing? Is it the homes or the characters that are selling the homes?
It's a little bit of both, really.
Yeah, there's some really neat stuff there, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I am the same as you. I really think it's neat to see what people are doing with their homes, but at the same time, my goodness, those characters can be entertaining.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So Ainsley, and thank you for coming back to the show. You were on our show. I'm very grateful for you being here, because you also were one of our very first guests.
Yes. Yeah. I probably about a year ago.
A year ago, or a bit better than a year ago. Yeah. So thank you for coming back. So Ainsley, what are some of those insurance policy items that we may not be familiar with and we ought to be?
Well, one in particular that I actually was shared with the Canadian Underwriting Magazine very recently was the condition that if a person's not going to be at the residence for more than 4 consecutive days, they need to have somebody checking in on their home regularly to make sure that, you know, things are not going wrong in the house, because they could be without coverage if they don't. And not every policy is the same, so mm-hmm. It's recommended that people check their policy to find out what the stipulation of their policy is. But the article was saying that most Canadians are not aware of that even being a stipulation in their policy. And this time of year, especially when people are going down south and leaving their homes for an extended period of time, it's a really important condition that they should be aware of. And even if you're going away for a week, I mean, more than 4 consecutive days, that people don't really think about that as being something that needs to be done.
Yeah, maybe somebody is just crossing the border, going into the States to do some shopping. Maybe they're only gone for a couple, but maybe they're gone for 4 or 5 days. And would they actually think that it's a critical matter to have somebody checking on the home or family. Maybe you have family just on the other side of the border, and or forget about the other side of the border, just anywhere else, and you're going to visit your family and sleep over for 4, 5, 6 days. Yeah. And go ahead, Ainsley.
Well, and the other thing, too, is if say, you have an illness, if you end up in the hospital and your house is left unoccupied for an extended period of time, again, you're not going to be thinking about that, obviously, because you've got other things that are on your mind. And it's just something that you need to be aware of, for sure.
So you need to have someone, a friend, family member, some sort of service, a person or service that will go into your home, that is a key holder, that can get into your home and just do a walk around. Is that all that's required, Ainsley?
Yeah, just take a look at the outside and the inside of the home. Check for, you know, anything that shouldn't be happening, leaks, or, you know, in the basement. You want to check for any kind of things going on there, but it's just because if the house is left not checked on, certain things that could happen, the damage could be a lot greater if they're not having somebody come in regularly.
Yeah, it just keeps growing.
That's right.
And now, the rule of thumb, 4 days, more than 4 days if you're gone. Now, this person or service that's checking on your home, does it change with every provider, or is there a set frequency that this key holder needs to check? Is it daily, or can it be weekly?
I think some policies will recommend that it's done daily, but I definitely would say that you're best to check your own policy or check with your broker to see what that stipulation is, because it can change depending on what insurance company you're with.
So it's know your policy.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what we're talking about. Yeah, that definitely is something I would think a lot of people aren't thinking about at all. And would that, I guess, do you know if that changes if you have an alarm system? Or is it still typically they want somebody to walk through?
I know of one company in particular that if you have a certain type of alarm set up that they're monitoring. Video surveillance of your home, that type of thing, that might be an acceptable method of checking on the home. But again, I would say definitely check your policy, because I wouldn't say that that's something that would be standard with every company, for sure.
Right. So are there any other items that we typically, we have the policies, we have these home insurance policies, and items that we ought to know that we're just surprised by?
A couple things. Limitations to coverage on the policy, such as jewelry, furs, those types of things are limited on a policy if the loss is due to theft or mysterious disappearance. Things like watercraft, that type of thing is going to be limited to a set dollar amount depending on what company you're with. That type of thing you should be aware of under your policy. Certain types of loss carry a higher deductible. Like, some companies will have a higher deductible for water damage losses than other insurance companies or other sections of your policy. So that's something you need to be aware of. I think that's...
Those cover the main items. So if you do have something unusually valuable, or maybe not unusually valuable, but substantially valuable, maybe is a better way to put it, is something you definitely want to talk to with your insurance broker. Well, Ainsley, we're just going to have a break now. So you've been listening to Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7 FM's local real estate talk show. Join us after this break. We'll continue to talk with Ainsley Brush about the most common insurance claims for homeowners and how to possibly prevent and or minimize those claims. This is Northumberland 89.7 FM Reality Realty, and I'm Dale Bryant. And my guest today is Ainsley Brush, insurance broker with the Insurance Protection Group. Before the break, we were talking about how familiar homeowners are with their home insurance policies and some items that they may not be aware of, but they certainly should become aware of. We'll just change topics here, Ainsley, and let's take a look at the most common insurance claims for homeowners and how to possibly either prevent them or reduce the damage done by these issues. What would you say, Ainsley, is the number one homeowner insurance claim at this time?
At this time, it's actually water damage. I just actually was in a seminar a few weeks ago, and they were talking about how water is the new fire. The trend is that water damage claims are on the rise as far as how much is being paid out. They account for 44% of the dollars paid out on all property claims in 2014, compared to about 39% a decade earlier. And the average cost of a claim has also increased from $11,709 in 2004 to $16,070 in 2014. So this is a 37% increase.
Yeah, that's a substantial jump in that. Oddly enough, we used to sometimes refer to house insurance as fire insurance, with water damage being the number one. Maybe we should be calling it water insurance. Yeah,
yep.
a little something different to wrap our heads around. So, Ainsley, this water damage, where is this water coming from? What's the source of this damage typically?
The source is coming from basements flooding, pipes possibly breaking, sewers backing up, those types of things.
So basement flooding, I'm thinking likely heavy rains, unusual rains and runoff, maybe sump pumps. Would that be it?
Sump pump failure can be a cause of it for sure.
So that it could come up through the sump pump around the foundation as well?
Yeah, now certain types of water damage and the way that's coming into the house is not necessarily going to be insurable.
Mm-hmm.
But, if there's cracks in the foundation, things like that, that's not necessarily something that's going to be covered by the insurance. Overland flooding is not something that's covered under the insurance policies. But things like sewer backup, sump pumps failing, things like that would be covered.
And a pipe that breaks inside your house?
Right.
That would be something covered?
That would be, as long as it's not a maintenance issue.
Right. So if we're neglectful, it's not going to be covered.
Right.
But if it's something unusual, beyond our control. So what about leaving my bathtub running?
Yes, that could be something that, I mean, that does happen from time to time. So that would be something that, you would have coverage under.
Yeah, maybe I think I'm going to have a bath, or the kids are going to have a bath, and I go downstairs and I get a phone call, and all of a sudden somebody needs me to come over for something, and I go, oh, yeah, I can do that. And, I mean, we have overflow protection in our bathtubs, but sometimes crazy things happen.
It doesn't always drain it as quickly as it's coming into the tub.
Yeah, so, and I've heard of that happen.
And toilets overflowing, too, can cause damage, especially if, say you're out for the day and don't realize that the toilet's mm-hmm. overflowing, and it can leak through a ceiling and cause a lot of damage in the house.
Or like we were talking in our last segment, you're out for over four consecutive days.
Mm-hmm.
Your toilet starts flooding, overflowing. You think you have insurance for this, and then the insurer finds out you didn't have somebody checking on your home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're away
you're covering
a week's vacation and nobody's checking the house.
And so you're covering all the expenses yourself then.
Yeah, they could potentially deny that claim.
Yeah, so that's serious stuff. So what are some of the things people can do to help prevent these situations, or at least minimize the damage done here, Ainsley?
Well, there's different things that the insurance companies within your home, and some companies will give discounts for these types of things. If you have a sump pump in your basement, the sump pump also, it's recommended that you have some sort of backup with the sump pump, so a battery backup or an alarm that goes off if the, you know, the waters come up. And that way, the sump, because the sump pump itself is not going to do all the protection. I think the battery, having some sort of backup mm-hmm. with it is going to help protect, you know, the water from getting in. There's backwater valves that can be installed in the home. What else? There is an automatic main line shutoff that you can put into the house that mm-hmm. Would shut the water off if there was a problem that you're having. I think that's all.
So the alarm systems, and this is something neat we talked about, because Carol Ann and I just recently purchased an alarm system, and it's about to be installed. And I was talking to you earlier about installing alarms that will actually detect if there's any water in your basement. And a couple of key places that the security company was telling me about, Northumberland Security here in Coburg, was to place one of the alarm detectors by the sump pump and another one by the hot water tank. And if the two leads find themselves in the same puddle of water, it completes the circuit. It's a monitored system. So there's another, not prevention, but a warning that something has gone wrong, right?
Yeah, anything that you can do to prevent some sort of loss from happening in your house. I mean, it's good for you not just to prevent you from having a claim, but it's good for you to have the hassle and the cleanup and everything else that's involved when you have water getting into the house. The other thing that is available with hot water tanks is a tankless system, which is something else that you can, you know, look at as far as water.
And if somebody goes to a tankless system, depending on the insurer they're using, can there be breaks on the insurance, their insurance rates?
Yeah, we do have, we have one company in particular that does give a discount for having a tankless hot water tank. So, there are some breaks for that type of thing.
Yeah, and I remember reviewing, you know, this alarm system with you at your office and saying, Ainsley, what kind of, you know, you put some money out for the system. And so, I mean, just plain and simple, by installing the system, you're getting protection and notification when something is going wrong. That's value in itself. But me being me, I was saying, Ainsley, is there any more discounts that will come my way? And there was for different things, wasn't there?
Yeah. The alarm on the hot water tank, there was no discount for that. But having the alarm with the sump pump, is definitely a help and will give added discounts. With some companies, not every company, but some companies do give that.
So, Ainsley, second largest culprit for home insurance claims.
That would be fire.
So fire, there's where fire comes in.
Fire's still in there, but it's not number one anymore.
Yeah, and what kind of damages are we looking at typically with fire?
Fire losses can be anything from the wiring, if you're overloading circuits, wood-burning appliances, leaving burners on, smokers. I mean, not many people these days, doesn't seem like many people are really smoking in their house, but mm-hmm. careless smoking can be a culprit as well.
Yeah, I mean, me showing homes, very rarely, on occasion, but not very commonly, do we walk into a home and we go, oh, somebody here is a smoker. Mm-hmm. We might see signs out on the back deck or the side door or in the garage at times. But, it seems that smokers now are very conscious or more conscious than before of actually smoking outside of the main area of the home.
I definitely get that when I ask people if they're smokers, because some companies do give a discount for that. Most people say, no, yes, I do, but outside. So, not many inside.
And any discounts for smoking outside?
No.
No. It must be a trust thing with the insurers.
Yeah, there is definitely a trust between
them. Yeah, because I remember when I was very young, hearing commercials even about a large cause of house fires was smoking in bed and falling asleep.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so those days, fortunately,
are over.
Yeah, are behind us. One of the things, Ainsley, that I know when we're showing homes and somebody is interested in a home, one of the things that we take a close look at is if a home is to have aluminum wiring. Now, I know aluminum wiring was popular in homes in around 1965 to say 75, 78, when it was most common. And it's not banned at all, but nobody's really using it today in their homes. How do the insurers look at aluminum wiring?
I don't find many homes that are fully equipped with aluminum wiring. A lot of times it's, a portion of the home has not yet been updated and they still have some aluminum wiring. Most insurance companies, I mean, they're not thrilled about having it, but if it's just a small portion of the home, then they'll usually be okay with, as long as it's inspected and there's an ESA report completed that, is confirming that there's no issues with the wiring that need to be concerned about.
Right. And I mean, aluminum wiring, the concern basically is it could result in a fire. Ultimately,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And overloading circuits. You mentioned that. We have a lot of devices now, don't we?
Mm.
And we like to overload those circuits. Do you find that that's a common cause of fire?
It can be. Mm-hmm. Extension cords and people plugging in many different things into one outlet. I know I've talked to electricians before. In an ideal world, they think that you should have, installed as many outlets as you need without the use of so many extension cords. But I'm not sure that can actually be done. But, people need to be, if they can have, power surge protectors and things like that on their cords, then that could be helpful.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think for a minute, Ainsley, you're going to have these stats memorized at all. Mm. I know in real estate, I do the snapshot in the residential market. I do that every week. So there's some things in my head, but my goodness, you can't keep it all in your head. But saying that, coming up to the Christmas season, we like to put lights outside. I'm going to guess there's a possibility we could overload a circuit by just putting string and string and string of lights on in the one plug. Do you see any more claims come up due to Christmas lighting? Is that something that is prevalent enough that you're aware of?
The only one that comes to mind for me really would be possibly in the use of real Christmas trees and having the lighting in the trees. And if the tree gets dried out,
right.
And then you've got the lights in the trees, that could be a possibility. Some people have Christmas trees that they actually light. My sister-in-law has a tree she puts little candles in. Now, she doesn't leave them lit, but every time she does it, I'm kind of like, ee.
Yeah, but so. she's she's getting really authentic there. She's a purist with the Christmas tree.
Definitely.
Another thing, Ainsley, those wood-burning appliances.
Right.
I mean, when we shop for a home, we put in an offer, just like the aluminum wiring, we typically will ask for an ESA inspection when we have something that has a wood-burning appliance, wood stove, fireplace, what have you. We typically are asking for a wet inspection to make sure everything is safe. But how about the homeowner that wood-burning appliance has been safe for the past 8 years, there's nothing wrong with it. We haven't had a problem. What are the concerns there?
Well, I think the main concern would be that they're not if they're not cleaning it regularly, because if you're not cleaning out the chimney and that type of thing, then there can be a buildup of creosote, which can be very flammable. And so it's the regular maintenance of the device and making sure that it's kept clean so that there are not issues with that type of thing, and proper use of it, you know, if you have an open fireplace, not leaving it unattended.
Mm-hmm.
Common sense is important, I think, when using those types of things.
And I don't want to broad brush anybody, but I think about people that maybe grew up rurally and their parents always had some sort of wood burning appliance, a fireplace, a wood stove, and they just grew up with seeing what the maintenance was done, what maintenance was done all their life to keep things safe. And then versus the city person. The city person who comes from whatever city. I mean, they have the romance of that rural property with that wood burning appliance, and maybe they're not aware of some of these things. I just wonder if those people need a little bit extra reminder when they move into a situation like that, that this sort of maintenance is so important.
I think that's definitely true, and probably, you know, it's a good idea for anybody that's talking to somebody that is new with a wood-burning appliance to educate them, and hopefully they're thinking the same thing, that, you know, I'm not familiar with this, I should probably talk to some people and you know, get some advice on how to keep it properly maintained.
Absolutely, and I would encourage everyone, you have a house insurance policy, talk to your insurance broker, find out what's on there, find out if there's going to be any surprises. If you are, like Ainsley said, number one claim is water, number two claim is fire, two big things that a person needs to be aware of and protect themselves against. And this fire, this alarm, monitored alarm system that we're getting installed now, what a great idea, not only against theft, burglary, but against fire, against water damage, against, you know, it can detect heat loss. There's so many things that these systems can do now, and they're monitored, and you can be on top of these issues in no time. And Ainsley says there can be breaks in your policy, so they can pay in many ways. Ainsley, we'll take another break. Folks, you've been listening to Reality Realty, Northumberland, 89.7 FM's local real estate talk show. Join us after this break, and we'll continue to talk with Ainsley Brush about what insurance providers want to know about that next home you'll be buying. Welcome back. This is Northumberland 89.7 FM's Reality Realty, and I'm Dale Bryant, and my guest today is Ainsley Brush, insurance broker with the Insurance Protection Group here in Northumberland County. Before the break, we were talking about the most common insurance claims for homeowners and how to possibly prevent them and minimize their potential damage. Ainsley, we also had a question here from a listener. They phoned in, and they're asking about your washing machine, your washer and dryer, and they're asking about will an insurance company policy typically cover for a busted water hose from the washer to the main lines if you don't shut them off in between loads?
Well, there's no stipulation that you have to shut off the water in between washing and between doing washes. I think if they did stipulate that, there'd be a lot of people having an issue with trying to keep up with that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the answer that there should be no problem with leaving the water on to your washing machine in between loads at all. One of the things, Ainsley, Dave Smith, celebrity home inspector, would always say is use those braided hoses.
Yes. Yeah, we do have some companies that do. they don't necessarily force the issue on it, but mm-hmm. they do request that it be installed.
Yeah, absolutely. And the price difference between those rubber and the braided hoses, it's not that much when you consider all the damage that could be done by your washer leaking there. Mm-hmm. And even though the insurer isn't saying, you know, you need to shut it off, I mean, that kind of leakage is something we just don't want to deal with anyways, is it?
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
So, Ainsley, let's take a look at some of the items that the insurance companies, the insurer, is going to want to know about your next home purchase. I know when we shop around, there's some things that I'll see in a home, and right away that triggers me to say, we need to put a condition in here that the buyer is able to obtain insurance for this new home. So what are some of these issues, Ainsley?
Well, probably the biggest one is the heating system, the type of heating system. If the home is heated by oil, mm-hmm. insurance companies are very particular about oil heat, the age of the oil tank, the type of oil tank, where it's located, all that kind of thing. It's still a huge issue, and some insurance companies are so particular that if it's a 14-gauge single-wall tank, they don't care how new that tank is. They don't want to even deal with it.
Yeah, you were saying something the other day to me about a company doing that very thing. It was a 14-gauge, I think you said, single-wall, 7-year-old tank. Was it?
It was a 7-year-old tank that had been installed by the builder because at the time there wasn't any issue with that type of tank.
Mm-hmm.
The particular insurance company that this client was with did not want to insure that type of tank. They didn't care how new it was. And we were able to find insurance elsewhere, but it just shows you how particular some of the companies can be when it comes to oil tanks. They do not budge.
The oil tank in use or the oil tank no longer in use?
Yeah, if it's no longer in use, the companies want it gone. They don't want to have any unused tanks on the property. They still feel, even if they're empty, that there's a chance for some sort of leakage, and they just want them gone and disposed of properly.
The whole mention of oil tank seems like a dirty word in homes and home insurance, and there's just a bad history there, isn't there?
Well, there is.
Environmentally,
yeah. For sure. And I feel bad for the client that's calling in that has an oil tank, because there are so many stipulations by the insurance company mm-hmm. and so much information that's needed. And some information that they don't necessarily have, they might have to get by the oil provider and that type of thing. So I do feel bad, but I guess the insurance companies have had such a bad history with them that they have no choice but to be that way with them.
Right. And so definitely the heating, whether there's wood-burning appliances, and we covered that in the last segment, needing a wet inspection to make sure they're safe. Is it an oil system? What other items are insurers asking about when somebody comes to you asking about the new home they're purchasing?
The electrical system, they'll want to know information about it when it was. If it's an older home, they want to know if the electrical system's been updated. They want to make sure there's no knob and tube wiring, mm-hmm. which I think most older homes have been updated now. It was an issue a few years back, but we're not seeing that type of wiring very much anymore. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the aluminum wiring, which they want to know if that's in place, and whether it's on breakers or fuses.
Right.
So
they don't like those old fuses, do they?
They prefer the breakers. Yeah. It's not to say that they won't insure with the fuses, but they're not a fan of 60-amp service. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, with all the, like we had talked about, all the things that you're plugging in these days, 60-amp really, you know, unless you're in a cottage where you're not plugging in a lot of things, they really prefer a minimum of 100 amp service.
So, Ainsley, if you're looking at a 60 amp fused panel, it's not necessarily that the insurer won't insure it, but will the rates be a little higher?
Well, I think in most cases with a 60 amp fuse panel, that the company is probably going to insist that it be updated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said in a cottage they might make a concession because things, you know, may not have the things plugged in like they would in a
right.
house. But again, it's something you want to check with the insurance company to see, because every company is different. Some are very particular about that type of thing, and others might be a little more lenient. But in your primary home, for sure, they're going to want at least 100 amp.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've been with the company, they may give you a bit of time to update that system to 100 amp if it's starting at 60. I know I had a client recently that had 60 amp service, and we were able to talk to the company, and they gave them some time to upgrade it. So
mm-hmm.
it's not that the insurance company is going to be completely unreasonable about it, but they want to know about it so that they can make suggestions on what needs to be done and what time frame to do it in.
Yes, and my experience as a realtor, having buyers buy a home, say I'm thinking of one in particular, there was aluminum wiring, it was still fuses as opposed to circuit breakers, and the company, their insurer, definitely they wanted the panel changed to circuit breaker. They wanted the aluminum to be checked by the ESA inspector, and any necessary upgrades to that system to be applied. But it's not as though the insurer said, we won't insure you. They said, yeah, sure, you can buy the house, and we'll, I think they gave them 60 days,
mm-hmm.
and we'll give you 60 days, and then we're going to come in, and we're going to want to have proof that this work's been done. So we, the insurer, know the house is safe.
Yeah, they're usually fairly reasonable. They understand that when you're buying a house, that you just because things haven't been updated, that's not necessarily your fault. You're new to the house, and a lot of times people buy these homes with the intention on updating everything. So
mm-hmm.
Insurance companies can be, you know, reasonable about that. So
what about the condition of a roof? Are the insurers concerned at all about that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you can look at, for example, a shingle roof. Just by looking at it, you can see what the condition of the roof is and see if the shingles are curling up or that type of thing. But generally, those types of roofs should be updated between 15 and 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends on the type of shingle that you have. And some will withstand better over the course of time. Steel roofs will last longer, obviously, so they don't have to be updated as frequently. But the insurance company likes to see an asphalt shingle roof anyways, or a wood shingle roof updated probably every wood shingle, probably more frequently, 10 to 15, and asphalt shingle between 15 and 20 years.
Exactly. And those 25-year shingles, they I'm not sure they're actually labeling them as such anymore, but they used to say this is a 25-year shingle, this is a 30-year shingle, 35. They didn't actually last that long, did they?
No, and I think that's again why I say is have a look at the shingles, because you mm-hmm. can see, you know, the condition of them, whether they're coming up or whether some are missing, and you know, having a home inspection done would be able to see some that are out of your view. But common sense would really tell you if the condition of the roof is not as good as you think.
Yeah, and we usually walk around to the south side of a home and you know, step back as far as we can to see what kind of condition that south facing side of the roof is, because that gets the most sun.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems to get the most wear and tear. Saying that, I know myself and buyers I've been working with, we've been surprised before when we get the home inspector up there and they're walking the roof and they get to see parts of that roof that just aren't visible. You know, the roof may appear as though it, you know, judgment from the ground, we're thinking it's got another 4, 5, 6 years, and home inspectors getting up there and taking pictures so we can see, and they're saying, you know what, if it was my roof, I wouldn't be waiting 4, 5, 6 years. So the home inspection is an excellent thing to have on there.
Yeah. Well, and they can get up in the attic as well. Mm-hmm. Because you might not necessarily on top of the roof see what's happening, but you might see that there's, you know, water coming in through the attic and there's mold areas
signs
or things like that. So,
yeah
definitely.
For sure. And all, most of these items will show up on that home inspection. I know the home inspections that I see that my buyers get done and that I do on new listings definitely cover these items. One question, Ainsley, a fairly new product out there, the PEX plumbing. So we used to have cast iron a long time ago. Then we moved into copper. Then we'd have the other plastic piping. Now we've recently gone into this PEX. Have you heard in the industry any issues with PEX plumbing?
I haven't heard a lot about it, to be honest with you. I hear, you know, talk of the ABS and the PVC,
mm-hmm.
but I know that, that one is coming out as well. But
yeah. It's still fairly new.
I don't hear any.
Well, that's good. That's good for PEX.
Yeah.
That's good for PEX. Well, Ainsley, I'm looking at the clock. We're 11:56. I thank you so much for coming here and shedding some really good light on our homes and the insurance in our homes, what we should be concerned with to protect our homes, what to know about our policies. If the listeners have any other questions about home insurance or would like to get in touch with you, what's the best way they can contact you?
They can call me 905-372-8701, extension 2230. You can reach me on my cell 905-396-1317 or email ainsley@insuranceprotect.ca.
And I would recommend you give Ainsley a call or drop her an email. She is absolutely excellent to work with. And Ainsley, very informative. Thank you again for joining me. I've enjoyed you as a guest every time you've been on. And if you, the listener, have any questions or comment about today's show or pertaining to any real estate, feel free to contact me by emailing dale@dalebryant.ca. Or calling into the radio station at 905-372-2391, as our one listener did today. Don't forget to join me, Dale Bryant. I'm an active real estate broker with Royal LePage Pro Alliance Realty Brokerage. Join me next Thursday from 11 a.m. until 12 noon for Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 FM, truly local radio. Until next week, folks.